You are a toy! You weren't the real Buzz Lightyear, you're an action figure! You are a child's plaything!
You are a sad, strange little man.
Welcome to Percolated Media's Toy Story Retrospective Series.
Shall we play a game?
No, thank you.
Are you sure?
Join Matt.
Oh, thank goodness you're here!
Adam.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Huh? He's posing.
And Garrett.
Stand still, Godzilla!
As they look at each film of the Toy Story franchise.
Alright, let's review this one more time.
From 1995's beloved original,
let's go home and play.
To 2022's Lightyear and beyond,
shoots and ladders.
Andy's favorite podcasters will review each Toy Story film and decide individually if the series flies or just falls with style.
Son of a building block!
So get ready to reach for the sky, podcast listeners.
Hello? Check. Better? Great. Everybody hear me?
Percolated Media's Toy Story Retrospective begins now.
All right, let's go.
Toy Story 3 released June 18th, 2010. Budget was $200 million. Wow. But with a box office take of $1.06 billion with a B, and this was directed by Lee Unkrich. We went 11 years from 2 to 3. Much larger time span between 1 and 2, but not only had a lot changed in animation, but Pixar's very foundation changed a lot since 1999. Did we ever think we'd get a Toy Story 3?
I thought we were done after 2. I thought that told that complete story. And I'm going to say that a lot in the next few weeks, but I didn't think there was a chance that we would get a Toy Story 3. And when it was announced, I gave 2 shits. I did not care.
Well, forget the did you think we'd get. Adam, did you want a Toy Story 3 in the first place?
No. The reason is, like, it as I talked about last week, like, I adore Toy Story 2. But to me, the big difference between Pixar and Walt Disney Animation was Pixar made single original movies, original quote unquote, but original movies time in and time out. They weren't a sequel redo factory that Disney had become. And that's what I loved about Pixar. And they kind of changed their game around when they were like, oh, we could do sequels and reuse our IPs. And I think that started to, my opinion of it was not favorable. And same way that it's not when Disney does sequels to their shit and remakes of their stuff. I'm not a fan of it. So to me, it took away what was special about Pixar.
Well, the weird thing is after Toy Story 2, they kind of went independent, right? They did Ratatouille and they did WALL-E. And then Disney picks it up and says, oh, by the way, we're going to be a sequel factory now. That's what scared me when I heard that they were doing this is, oh, we're just going to attach the sequel train to all these Pixar properties and we're just in it for the revenue now. And the thing, you can say a lot of things about Toy Story 1 and Toy Story 2, but they felt like complete stories and they felt organic. Now I felt like we were even going to get that feeling. And that's what really scared me, what kind of kept me away from theaters to see this.
Well, the second one was such a step for me that I can now no longer disassociate them. Two reinforces so much of the first one that I can't think of one without the other. And the combination of the passage of time, which 11 years is a long time in Hollywood to wait for sequels, especially one with the merchandising clout that Toy Story has always had. But the cynical side of me could not look past the acquisition that happened, and that being the prime reason for this getting made. It's not the sole reason, but for me, who openly did not want another installment, that's all I could see. That was the dominating force of my mind, because prior to Toy Story 3, Toy Story 2 was the only sequel they had ever made. You had Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, Incredibles, Cars, Ratatouille, WALL-E, Up. All original films, all of them exclusive to Pixar, and Toy Story 2 was their only sequel. But there were talks of, you know, doing Incredibles 2, as we talked about. That took a long time to permeate. It took them a long time to do Monsters University, but at least that was a prequel, not a sequel, but it's still an extension of the original. When Toy Story 3 finally got announced, it was the thought of, because the deal between Pixar and Disney initially was 7 films. All characters created by Pixar were owned by Disney, and Disney owned the rights to make the sequels, up to and including Cars. That was the cutoff point. Pixar retained the right of first refusal to work on those sequels. If they said no, Disney would have passed it down, which they had done. But let's talk about where Disney was in the aughts, because they were, I call it the rebuild mode, in the same way that, like, you build an NFL franchise from the ground up, because they had their renaissance era of the late 80s, early 90s, and then from Tarzan being the last one. Their films were very varied, but some of them weren't doing very well. You had Emperor's New Groove, which I think is one of their best. I love that movie. Then you had stuff like Atlantis, Treasure Planet, Chicken Little, Home on the Range. Quite frankly, some of those felt beneath Disney. But they weren't sequels. Their sequels were still banished to DVD and video. But in 2004, which is when the split seemed to be the likeliest, Eisner himself, Michael Eisner, said, "We're going to produced Toy Story 3 with Circle 7 Animation as the new studio, which was going to be a subgroup that specialized specifically in CGI animation. And they were, it was going to be like the off, I don't want to say off brand, but they were going to be the subgroup that produced all the Pixar sequels."
Mm-hmm.
To the point where even Tim Allen said, "If Pixar's not on board, I'll still come back and do it, because I'm sure this paid very well." Mm-hmm. And this thing got a theatrical release. They were saying spring 2008. That's our time frame to do it. So it would have been the same summer as WALL-E if everything turned out as intended. And the direct-to-video influence of Disney seemed pretty paramount, not because of the studio of that same name, but they got director Bradley Raymond, who had directed Hunchback of Notre Dame 2 and Lion King 1.5, to direct that. So Adam, when you hear that in hindsight, or at the time for that matter, was that that first indicator that, like, your worst fears were going to come to fruition?
That's exactly it. That's when I was just put my hands up and just like, I can't believe you're going to take one of the best things that had happened to non-live action filmmaking, one of the best things that had happened to cinematic storytelling, and you were going to turn it into a sequel mill in the realm of direct-to-video sequels. I mean, look what came out after Toy Story 2, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, Incredibles, Cars, Ratatouille, WALL-E, and Up. When Ratatouille is my least favorite of those, there is nothing but banger after banger. And we're talking about animated movies, and those still stand the test of time. Like, to this day, so that I thought that Disney was just almost out of spite was going to do this to Pixar, I wanted nothing to do with it. And I was sorely, sorely disappointed that I thought that's where we were going. Because I had kids at this point. I had kids that had grown up with so many of these. And look, Finding Nemo just could still make me cry to this day. Monsters, Inc. has got some of the most amazing sequences in a movie. Incredibles was, as we talked about before, one of the best superhero movies ever made. Cars is a love letter to the road. It's just, I couldn't believe what they were going to do.
And so the script that they were going to go with initially was Andy goes to his grandmother's house, which right away this premise makes you think the quality was going to be down, because the ambition was nowhere near what it was with the second one. The house is getting remodeled. That's why they go over. Andy's toys mix with new characters. And it was basically a whodunit-style murder mystery. It was going to be really self-contained. Apparently, Disney loved the script enough that it was put in the bag as a possible fourth movie, if that ever came. The final version of that script was written by the co-writer, the writer of Meet the Parents, which doesn't really inspire a lot of confidence in myself, where Andy's toys ship Buzz, who's malfunctioning, back to his factory in Taiwan. And then they realize that Buzzes across the world were malfunctioning, and there was a giant recall, so the toys ship themselves to Taiwan, and they have to go rescue Buzz. That part sounds pretty similar to kind of what we got in 2. Isn't that fair to say?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how much originality could you add to it? But the part that did interest me when I read about this was Buzz was going to meet other toys, sort of like what Woody did, that they were once loved, but they got recalled and no longer played with. Buzz would have met a new Star Command figure that was going to be like the Buzz 2.0, called Dax Blastar, with a pet cat Put that in the bag, everybody.
I was going to say.
Oh, my God. Hang on. I've seen a trailer. Wait a minute.
Yeah. Oh. Cats in the bag, not out of the bag, because they'll recycle that. But basically, that kind of got put on pause because Disney flat out bought Pixar in 2006.
Yep. From a divorce to a fucking marriage.
Mm. Yeah. You could argue, though, we're just doing it for the kids. It's the thing you can look at, because Circle 7 got shut down and that version of Toy Story 3 got canceled. The fortunate thing was that Bob Iger said that Disney was going to transfer this production to Pixar. They were not going to be the driving force. The brain trust of Pixar, like John Lasseter, Pete Docter, Lee Unkrich, who wound up directing this film, they each kind of had their own idea for a sequel that they had been carrying around if they were ever going to make it. And they basically dropped what they were thinking of initially. And they couldn't come up with anything. They rewatched the first two movies. They wrote a treatment. And from there, it kind of got overhauled several times because Lasseter said he was not going to direct it because he had just done Cars. Lee Unkrich, who was the co-director on 2, was going to be the sole director. And they said 2010 is going to be our release date. We're going to push it back. And they said in 2008, this is when we got the first snippet of what it was going to be, that Woody and his toy box friends are dumped at a daycare center after their owner leaves for college. So that's certainly a new premise. And the thing that intrigued me was that they were addressing how much time had passed between 2 and 3. Not in a film sense, but in a chronological sense, because it would have been over 10 years. So I like that they were kind of addressing the elephant in the room.
Agreed. And I think that's part of the smartness that came with how they decided to do this. Because you got to realize, if someone is 10 when they went to see Toy Story 2, they're 21. Are you getting that same? How do you get the audience back without doing, straight to VHS movies that you're just watching while you're babysitting? So how do you address it? And it's a very smart move.
And while not to the same degree of 2, there was a big technical issue on this one. Not the data files weren't lost. But when they went back to do and work on the original models for the characters, they could open the old files, but there were so many error messages that they couldn't edit them. So they literally had to recreate every character from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Because these movies can't have a steady production. They all have to go through some kind of problem.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
It would have been a necessity because of how much animation had changed since 1999.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Before, we've talked about the stress levels associated with these movies because they had a deadline to reach and they didn't have that much money to work with. Here, they have all the money in the world to work with and they can take as long as they fucking want.
So while they were working on the movie, they were saying, sending scripts to the actors to be like, hey, we're going to do this. What do you think? And it wasn't until they got everyone in a room, or most of the cast in a room, they showed them a story reel, which was, it's just the storyboards where you add pre-recorded audio, music, all that kind of stuff. It's like a test reel almost. Mm-hmm. And that's what got a lot of the actors to sign on, along with the fact they paid Tom Hanks $15 million, mm-hmm. which was a record for someone making a voiceover project for an actor.
One of the brilliant things with Tom Hanks' deal is Tom Hanks does almost none of the voices for the toys.
It's his brother
does, and his brother gets paid to do that. However, Tom still gets a percentage of the sales for the voice his brother did the work on for the merchandise.
Brilliant.
It's just damn. Oh, evil son of a bitch.
Well, I mean, you work it till you can get it. I mean, that's what you strive for. That's what you work for. So good for him.
He's a local boy here in the Bay Area. Yep. Good for him.
So as this was coming out, we got the first teaser trailer. They played it in front of Up.
Oh, yeah. Because I saw Up at the drive-in, so I remember that.
Now, let me be upfront and say, even with the trailer, and once I knew this was coming out, I had no interest. I got everything I wanted out of 2. And I'm not just saying this because I was 16 going on 17 and had one nothing to do with kid films. That wasn't it, because I Pixar films were an event. They came out every year.
Mm-hmm.
All generations went to go see them, even my cynical ass. And I was one of the people crying like a bitch during the opening 10 minutes of Up, which is still the best singular story that Pixar has ever told.
Yep.
And they put themselves in a corner. I'm just talking about the opening 10 minutes. I'm not talking about the rest of the movie. If you showed that singular thing and put that as like best animated short film, it may be the best thing they've ever made. The problem is, I like the rest of the movie, but nothing can compare to that. And I said the same thing about WALL-E. I think the first third of WALL-E is one of the best singular things Pixar has done. And it kind of loses steam for me when Eve shows up. But I thought this was just going back to the well. I couldn't see past the Disney merger, and we were getting a lot of the 3D craze around this time because this was Disney Digital 3D. It was advertised as such, and they did the re-releases of the first two in theaters in 3D.
Yeah.
And like I said, I just couldn't bring myself to get excited until it came out. And I don't know what flipped the switch. I don't know if it was the fact that I was on Rotten Tomatoes and saw this thing got a 98%, which blew my mind. And everybody, critics that I was reading, were saying this is sort of the capper on a trilogy, which this was not intended to be a trilogy, and most aren't. There's very few that are come out with the plan of we're going to make all three. And this and the Before trilogy probably have the highest critical score across the board.
Yeah.
And not just because they take the same amount of time, basically. The first one each came out in 95. You know, you waited 4 years versus 9 years, and then you got another sizable jump between two and three.
You know, we talked about with Shawshank Redemption that the Oscars pretty much upped the visibility factor, and people noticed it when it got nominated for 6 or 7 Academy Awards. The reason I finally went out and bought this DVD is because this thing got nominated for Best Picture this year. It piqued my interest, and when I bought that thing and I took it home, I watched it with my mom. And not only was I crying at the end of it, but I remember saying, this might be the best trilogy I've ever seen. And that was my curiosity coming back.
You watched it at home?
Yeah, I watched it at home. I didn't go to theaters to see this. Hell no. It was when
that was going to be my question for Adam, because were both your kids born at this time, or was it just Maddie?
No, this was a drive-in movie like 2 weeks after Alex was born, because he was born just before this. And we were big fans of taking kids to see the movies in the drive-in because we could, especially when they were babies, because we could feed without a problem and all that. So this would have been a drive-in movie.
I did go see this in the theater, and I took my mom. Biggest mistake I ever made, because the reason I say that is because I had forgotten that Andy was going away to college. And I was entering my senior year of high school.
Oh, yes.
And as the oldest of her kids, I didn't put two and two together, not because this is movie number three. And she could not stop looking at me throughout the movie. And I thought it was her like trying to read my reaction to see if I liked it, because I was pretty into movies around this time in 2010. But no, it was the you see something on screen that is what you're going through in real life. And she could not stop welling up. And I could not allow myself to look at her because it would have gotten me. And to be honest, I got more emotion out of her than I did watching the movie itself at the time. I liked it. I gave it a good review, but I wasn't one of those people who came out in tears or like saying that this is one of the saddest things they've ever seen. I didn't have that read on it. I wonder, looking back now, if it was just because of my age and trying to put up that wall, or if I had seen this by myself, would I have been more willing to put that barrier down? I honestly don't know. But yeah, this thing made $1 billion.
That's crazy. And when we were going over what we were going to be doing this week, when we were talking about our schedule, you mentioned that this thing made over $1 billion. I could not believe it when you said that. Unbelievable. I don't remember it being that way.
It was the highest grossing animated film, the highest grossing film of the year. And at the time, it was the fourth highest grossing film of all time. You know, it was Titanic. It was Avatar. I don't know what number three was at the time. And it was this. And not only that, you had the year before Up was nominated for Best Picture because they had condensed the film to 10. Or the field to 10, excuse me. Up to 10. Up, excuse me. I'm doing it now too, God damn it. But a lot of people felt Up had no chance of winning, even though I think it was one of the best films that was nominated, but it didn't feel like it had a puncher's chance of winning. I felt somewhat differently about Toy Story 3 when it was announced. I thought it had as good of a chance as anything.
I did too.
To actually win. And it got the typical consolation prize of, oh yeah, we'll give you best animated feature because we still have this thought of animation as lesser, you know, because you don't have best comedy at the Golden Globe at the Oscars, but best animated feature still gets niched. And honestly, when you look at that slate, Toy Story 3 has been the movie that's lived on the longest. And like I said, I honestly thought it had a chance of winning, not just because their Oscar campaign, the whole Not Since campaign, what they did was it was posters with characters from the film comparing Toy Story 3 to like Return of the King, Titanic, Shakespeare in Love. It was what they did at the fourth one, kind of with the Child's Play. Yep. What that was making fun of.
Yeah, that's right. Me and you talked about that because we were doing Child's
Play. Oh, we were sending memes back and forth. Yeah. Every poster. I can't believe they're doing this. It's fucking brilliant. It was for Child's Play, not Toy Story 4.
Yeah, it was one of the first times you and I actually got in a conversation like that. And it was so funny the way Child's Play was playing off of the campaign of Toy Story. It was really funny.
And look, when the King's Speech's name was called, there was kind of that collective sigh. Because look, everybody, when you see the Oscars, you kind of have your own film that you want to champion. I don't know a single person under the age of 85 who was happy with that movie winning. Because that was like the pinnacle example of old white people picking the feel-good movie because it took place at a time they were actually alive. Like, because you had, like, Toy Story 3, which was, I think, the sentimental favorite. You had the film snobs pick of The Social Network.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was reflecting the times, and I think Black Swan was nominated, so you got your horror, like, hinge if you wanted to be that. 127 Hours, you know, that's your real life, like, documentary style movie from a celebrated director, and you pick The King's Speech. I still can't believe it.
I remember really rooting for Social Network that year.
Yeah, I think we fought because you wanted Social Network, I wanted Black Swan.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, if you're asking me, like, on this list, it had no chance of winning, but I fucking love the True Grit remake.
Still haven't seen that.
It was all right. It
had no chance of winning, but I would not have given it Best Picture, but I know a lot of people wanted Inception to win. I said, please, no. I notoriously don't care for that movie. It's one of my big hot takes.
Yeah, we've...
The Fighter got a lot of...
Yeah, I remember really liking that one.
Because it had the feel-good thing, and it's boxing, so there was the Rocky connection, but you had two of the actors win Oscars for that, so it didn't feel like it was gonna get that. I think Winner's Bone was nominated, so you get like the small indie film.
A little bit of everything was nominated that year.
Yeah, and they picked the fucking King's Speech. Like, it's a fine movie, but like, I feel like I'm watching a freaking BBC television film, and it gets by on the performances. That's the only reason.
Mm-hmm.
That is the McDonald's choice of what do you want to eat tonight.
Like, yeah, right.
And you had, the only other one was The Kids Are All Right, which I liked, but it's not Best Picture worthy.
Oh, yeah, that was okay, too. God, I forgot about that movie. Holy shit.
All right, well, speaking of things we didn't forget about, let's get into Toy Story 3, which opens right away Pixar in the same way that 2 showed the animation took a quantum leap forward. This one is them putting their nuts on the table saying, we are going to shoot our equivalent of like a full-blown action scene to show that we are taking another big step forward in animation. And it's kind of, even looking back, it's like, wow, they really have perfected the way these toys can move.
Yeah, you get the feeling that this was how they really wanted to start number one with. You know, and they had
reflected in what we find out at the end of this.
Exactly. I really like the beginning of this movie. It introduces us to these characters, and Potato Head is fucking glorious as the villain here. Like, all of this is fun stuff. I love the beginning of this film.
This is one of the movies where things started to change a little bit for Pixar. The short before this movie alone is one of my favorite shorts. Like, we don't talk about them, but some of the stuff that they pre-do the movies with kind of leads you into what kind of emotion should you have. And Day and Night, one of my favorites other than La Luna, which we'd get a couple years later before Brave, which I think is Pixar's best thing they've done.
Yeah, and I felt like I got gypped because I liked that better than Brave.
I love Brave so much.
I called that movie Bit.
Oh God, I love that film. But shocker, redhead. This intro looks great. You could tell that they are whipping it out and showing just what they could do animation wise. But I find this to be a cacophony of, we threw every single idea that we thought of in this little opening sequence, which I get, it's a child's mind, but it feels like we are making every reference to anything we could think of.
So I like it initially. I like that we think it's just Woody, Jesse, and Bullseye because it's a train heist. It's literally the Great Train Robbery.
It's the Great Train, yep.
You know, it's paying off Potato Head from the first film being the villain, but you got Mrs. Potato Head acting like a ninja, which made me laugh. I like how it's, forget a kid's imagination, this is like a kid hopped up on Mountain Dew, playing with all their toys, and it's all stream of consciousness because you got the aliens in a Corvette. It's almost like a James Bond opening because then you cut to Ham in a freaking Zeppelin dropping a mushroom cloud A-bomb of monkeys in a barrel.
Amazing.
It's super hyperactive. I love it. You see Buzz actually flying, kind of like the second one. But it's very much the kid having too many toys in their sandbox. And I was annoyed. This is me looking at this with a critical eye. I don't like how they regurgitate lines from the first one again, like right down to the force field dog and the dinosaur who eats force field dogs. I thought that was a little too much of been here, done that.
Well, it's just doing it, but doing it better.
Well, I think it's doing it better from a visual standpoint.
Yeah.
But like I said, this is going to get into one of my things about this movie. I think there are times where it's a little too similar to the previous two. Whether it's theme, whether it's direct callbacks, because now it's the mentality of, oh, it's a trilogy. We got to wrap everything together and tie, you know, interconnected tissue. Now I'm not going to overly criticize the movie, and we'll talk about that later on. But that is something that stood out to me on this viewing. There are a lot of times where I was like, oh, I've kind of seen this before. They cut to Andy as a kid. I love how it's like home video footage of the mom recording, because this would be like the late 90s, early 2000s, and they're aging Andy up. They play the Randy Newman song again that I'm sure Garrett absolutely detested. And I love how the last one is, we're going to be together forever. And it cuts to all them in the toy bin. And I love how this is the first time you see Andy has aged. Now he's a full-blown, like, 17, 18 years old. It's him opening the toy chest. I think that's a really cool reveal how to show that.
I agree. I really enjoy when we cut to the mom at the video. Like, we're seeing this as kind of a rehash of Andy as a child. And this is how we remember him, right? It's been 11 years, right? It's been, at this point, it's been 15 years since the original. So we're seeing all of that personified in this one clip. And we are reliving him as a child for this one little tiny bit of film. And then after that, we are going into a new adventure. But I do like the callback to Andy as a child.
It's a smart way to remind you where we were, and it's a good way to show the passage of time. How problematic is Andy's mom that she can't get a date in 15 years, man? I mean, she's still a single mom with... find a man, find a woman. I mean, still?
I'm starting to think my theory is that the husband died of cancer or something, and that was her one love.
Yeah.
I do as well. I'm making a really bad joke that I'm going to get yelled at for, but yeah.
No, I thought it was funny. Don't worry.
Yes,
I did. But my thought was, oh God, where is this going?
I was going to say, I'm marrying a single mom, and you don't know how many times I've heard how hard it is for a single mom to get somebody worthy of being around your kids.
I'm still waiting for her to find someone. this is funny. I'm going to nitpick one thing here that I can't believe. Did he never get any new toys? This dude has had freaking 10 years of birthdays and he never has anything new to play with.
Yeah. It's like he got Buzz and then stopped at that.
Yeah. Jesse shows up at his door and he's never got anything since. And I don't know why it bugged me, but you could have introduced some new characters in this little home movie, but you chose not to do it. It just made me feel weird.
Well, I feel like they didn't do that because one thing about this movie, there's a ton of new characters.
Yeah, a lot of new characters.
You know, because in the second one, it's really only the Roundup gang that are the new toy characters. And then you're just bringing the old crew along. This one, you got two sets of new characters that we're going to get into. But I also like that even though it's 2010, Andy is looking for his phone. That's the first thing. And when he leaves the room, they're all like, oh my God, he actually touched me. Which, that's funny, but then that's also like really depressing to think about.
Oh, yeah. This goes into some really interesting territory when it comes to that. But these toys are craving the attention that they used to have. Buzz and Woody ended the last film saying, let's just enjoy this because there's going to be a time where it's cast off. But until then, let's enjoy it. Well, the time has come. And they are now all realizing that, yeah, Andy is getting ready to move on. He is getting ready to leave the house. And I just love this plan they come up with here.
This toy box is how I have my Toy Story DVDs, and I don't think I can ever get rid of it as much as I've been getting rid of stuff. But it's a toy box. You open it up, and it's foam on the inside with each disc from this first trilogy.
Nice.
And that toy box is as much as anything. It's like Luxo. It's just perfect.
Well, it's also the whole thing of, like, to Garrett's point, we knew this day was coming, but you still can't, you think you're ready for it until it actually comes. Mm-hmm. And as we see, Jesse has real, like, PTSD with how she reacts to being put in the garbage. That's really good character consistency. It is a little weird that the army men say, fuck this, we're leaving.
Yeah, why don't more toys do this? This was really weird. I had forgotten about this. Why doesn't anybody join them and go with them? And where are they going to go?
They're not paying Arlie Ermey is what's going on.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and they're going AWOL.
Yeah.
But they're all like, this is our lot in life, and we're all going to get in the attic, and at least we'll still be together. And Woody's trying to, he's trying to talk to them like the politician who's telling you, oh yeah, the recession's coming, but outside of that, everything's okay.
The war's over.
I love ones not on board. Like, Ham has one of my favorite lines. All right, let's see how much we're going for on eBay.
Ham so is never better than he is in this movie. He is glorious in this. So many great lines. And out of all of this, Woody is the optimist. Woody is like, he's the one who has confidence that Andy's going to come through and still be there for them. But everybody else is coming to the realization, actually, no, that's not the case.
And much like two, they get put away by kind of accident because they get put in a garbage bag that he was going to put in the attic. But the mom winds up grabbing it and putting them on the literal street walk like garbage.
Yeah, well, before you get that,
on the way to college.
Before you get there, though, I mentioned the plan. I do like the plan they'd have. Okay, we're going to put the phone here, and when he comes to the phone, like, he's going to realize that we're here, and he's going to start playing. No, that's not what happens. And that's very important for later on in this film. But in looking at interviews for this movie, the one thing the animator said was the toughest thing to do in this movie out of everything, the bags. The bags and the texture of them was the toughest thing for them to do. They could not get it right. I think they finally did end up getting it right because it looks really good, but that was a real struggle for the animators with this film.
Well, speaking of struggle, they have gotten people down much better.
Oh, God.
You know, they're certainly more expressive. Yeah. Andy looks a lot better than he did in that first one.
Very expressive, and he doesn't look like he's from a Dire Straits video anymore. And hair,
yeah,
and
they don't look like extras from Black Hole Sun.
Yeah, humans are. They finally got humans down pretty well in this.
But it's also the thing of, like, you see Andy, like, he puts Woody in the college bin, and I think that really plays into the last scene, probably the most famous scene in this movie, which we'll certainly talk about in great detail. But Woody doesn't get put away, and he has to, another great callback to two, the dog. Now he's, you know, old and, you know, not as mobile, which, yeah, this movie has a lot to say about, like, mortality and, which much like the second one does, but they even got me with that. Like, this movie, it's very much like, yeah, it's funny, but then when you think about it on a subtextual level, there's real, like, existential dread.
Well, that's the brilliant thing about these movies, though. That's what's so interesting about them, is that you have these inanimate objects feeling such human emotions. And the thing about it is, I didn't think I could care about a Mr. Potato Head. But the last 15 years up until this movie proves to you, no, you actually really, really care about them. And that's the genius behind this Toy Story movies in my eyes up to this point.
Woody thinks they all get crushed in the back of the garbage truck, driven by Sid, or... So we're led to believe, because he's got the shirt.
Yeah, he's got the shirt, but they never explicitly say it or show it, do they?
Yeah, kind of been, like, retroactively confirmed.
Yeah, which I think is a good way to do it. You don't need to have a name tag. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have... That shirt alone tells you this is Sid's lot in life. And you know what? He's probably making more money as a garbage man than Andy is going to college. Good for Sid.
I was
going to
say, those sanitation workers do very well. So he's...
Yes, they do. Probably dating Andy's mom.
Oh, that should be Toy Story 5. He comes back as the stepdad. Same age.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, I kind of want to see that movie. But he thinks they get crushed in the back of the truck, but turns out that they managed to get out using Rex's tail. So this is two movies in a row where they have to use Rex's body to get out of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I like that, you know, some of the callbacks I'm annoyed by, but some of them are really clever and pay off things we've seen in previous movies. But again... One of the things I don't like about this movie, and I'll get into this now, it's still Woody versus everyone else.
It is, and I think this is where some redundancies start to really rear their head. Even when they flee from the garbage truck, they're under a recycling bin, and the only thing I could think of is that's the cone from last movie. There are certain things where I'm just like, saw it already. Simpsons did it. It's just, you're doing what you did and changing barely enough for me to not know that. Look, if it's been 10 years, you're a kid, you didn't see it before, or you didn't see it in this context, but I'm already starting to see some copycat of what you did.
Now, neither of you guys saw this in 3D, right?
No. Unless I was specifically told it's worth going in 3D, I never did.
Okay. There's certain scenes in this movie where I think they would probably look good in 3D. I was wondering.
Well, I think that's why the colors in this are a lot more vibrant, is mm-hmm. to make the natural dullness that you get with the 3D glasses not be as much of an offsetting factor.
Animation looks, I didn't see this one that way, but animation generally looks amazing in 3D because you don't have the live action problems with it. You can easily do adjustment for 3D.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about depth perception and things like that. But to my point about Woody versus everyone else, the toys don't give him any leniency, which they should, because he's been proven right both times. But they're still like, no, you're Andy's moving on, which they have a right to feel that way because they've talked about that day coming. But I'm just frustrated that they don't give him any reasonable time to defend himself, considering he's been proven right in each of the previous two movies.
Same conflict, just in a different way.
But this has more of a doom and gloom feel than I feel any of the other movies have had, because Andy is going to be moving on and they don't know what to do about that. So it is playing that same beat, but that's this movie, isn't it? It's playing same beats we've seen two previous times. So I didn't have too much of a problem with that.
Well, it's got a drum set and it hits a lot of the same beats, not just this one, but they wind up, they go in the box. It's marked Sunnyside because their toys are going to be donated, which, as we'll find out, may not have been the attic might have been better in hindsight.
I do love the joke they say where they go up there, will be with the Christmas ornaments. That's a wonderful joke.
Which is certainly very true, because, you know, they wouldn't be played with, but at least they'd be together. And it's kind of the reverse of Woody being immortal. He's not being played with, but he gets passed down from generation to generation. This one, you're perpetually played with without having to be in a glass. Kids change, but the ages don't. So it's a new perspective, but they get in the box, they show up at the daycare, we're introduced to Bonnie, who's one of the kids that's there, so we're setting that up, that there's another kid who's going to be important on multiple instances.
I do love that the setup here, because to them, this sounds amazing. They're going to keep being played with, right? We're going to keep having a rotation of kids, and we are going to have the attention that we crave. And to them, this sounds amazing, and I do love the reveal. Actually, no, it's not as amazing as you think.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of being sold a timeshare.
Yeah.
Basically, but they get there, and you know, they're all like, oh my god, new toys. And we're introduced to Lotso the bear, who I immediately called as the villain. This was not a surprise to me.
I don't think it was meant to be. Well, the second you see him,
like grown-ass adults like us, no. But this is where I'm also annoyed. This is the second movie in a row where we have an older toy who walks with a cane or a pickaxe that were set up to be as benevolent and giving, and it turns out they're a monster.
Big difference, though. Big difference, because Lotso is damaged. The reason why Stinky Pete was so angry was because he'd never been played with. Lotso had been, and he'd been let down. He's already classified as the villain, because as soon as they come in, he goes, you're never going to not feel like you're not played with anymore. Like, he already has a pessimistic view, which is all automatically makes him a bad character in everybody else's eyes.
Adam, did you see the forest through the trees with Lotso?
Yeah, and here's my issue with Lotso. I love this story, and I thought it was done great last movie.
Mm-hmm.
All they did was take Jesse's story and put it in this damn strawberry-smelling bear.
Mm.
And that is lazy, it's unacceptable, and it made me cry last week. Now I'm rolling my eyes. I don't care that the same thing happened to Ned Beatty that happened to Joan Cusack. You know what? It was emotional with Jesse. Now it's just redundant. This is lazy as all hell.
I don't view it as lazy. I think it's recycled, which I guess you could which is ironic given what happens in the third act of this movie. But I am annoyed that it's the same backstory. But what I do appreciate, it shows how people respond to trauma in different ways. You have people who use it and they become gaslighting manipulators, which is what Lotso is. But also, that's what Prospector did in the last movie. He tempted Woody with immortality and living on. Now, he did it in less crude ways, and he only plays his hand when he absolutely has to. But here, what I'll also say that saves it, I think Ned Beatty does terrific voice work here.
I do too. I don't think Stinky Pete was as malevolent as Lotso is. You know, Lotso is a different character in my eyes. I like the fact that he is actually evil and Jesse was just meant to be the sympathetic toy that was thrown away. Lotso is that, but the strawberry smells and everything else makes him out to be a completely different character in my eyes. I completely see the differences here and I'm going with it because of how damaged Lotso is as compared to last week.
Yeah, he's damaged, but I'm also like, I had more sympathy for Prospector and his plight than I do for Lotso. Which is also a weird thing. And also, I'm annoyed. This is fucking season 3 of The Walking Dead. He is the governor. This is Woodsboro.
Yeah.
You know, southern guy who's the leader and tries to say, oh yeah, this is all a utopia. And we find out he's a horrible monster. The difference is Lotso doesn't have severed heads in his living room. Although he very well could, because this movie goes to some horror level places.
It goes crazy.
In this daycare center. Like, this might as well be Auschwitz. He might as well be the Führer. It's considered rather than southern, but he's telling them, you know, here you'll always be played with, you're just gonna stay in the caterpillar room, which right away should tell you, oh, something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
We're also introduced to other characters. You have the octopus, who's voiced by Whoopi Goldberg. You have the baby that doesn't talk, which is equally as horrifying as the big monkey we get later.
Yes.
Because Lotso's got muscle. Yeah, everybody did. Like, and this one, Barbie's part of the group, and it only makes sense to bring Ken in. And I was shocked at the time I was watching it going, oh my God, that's Michael Keaton.
I love Michael Keaton in this movie.
I love his voice work, but I hate what they do with Ken.
I love what they do with him. Nobody likes Ken. I don't like
that it's cheap.
Oh, I laugh.
Plastic-esque humor. And as a gay man, I was a little annoyed that they're kind of hinging on the ambiguously gay aspects of the character.
I was laughing.
I got issues with Barbie in this. Like, I get it. You are trying to make up for lost time, and maybe Mattel was in on some story meetings. But even at the beginning, like, Barbie is complaining and crying to Jesse. And I'm like, that kind of wrong person to be complaining about wondering your lot in life when Barbie's always had it good. But they shove so much Barbie into this after last week's film finally brought her into it. I feel like they're making up for lost time, and they go too far.
Well, last week they had a dozen Barbies.
Yeah,
well, yeah.
Well, they were trying to compensate, but at least that was more practical in the sense they were in a toy store, so Barbie, of course, would be there. And she was only the tour guide. She didn't go with them, but this is Molly's, Andy's sister's Barbie. And there's a Ken here. And I do laugh at the innuendo about, like, nice ascot and things like that. That makes me laugh. And like I said, I think Keaton does great voice work. This was, like, his first big role in a long time.
A long time, yeah. Was this before or after?
His research.
This was before Birdman. Birdman was 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was kind of the comeback kid for Keaton. Yeah, I think Keaton is here to play. I think he does a good job. And I can't even say I don't like what they do. There's just too much.
Can't even say.
But this is kind of the gimmick they play even in the Barbie movie, freaking 10 years later. So it's one note.
And I think, to Adam's point, Barbie and Ken kind of take away from a lot of the other toys. It's like now that Mattel finally had their prized horse, not just because Bullseye's in this, but it's like now that they had a seat at the table, they were kind of making everyone else fight for scraps. Because I like all the other toy characters like Ham, Potato Head, Rex, but I feel like they kind of get lost in the shovel in favor of Barbie and Ken.
Yeah, I wish, I like that we get a variety of toys here at Sunnyside, but there's not a single duplicate toy. And I don't know of anybody that's ever taken their kid to a daycare, but there's a lot of duplicates and there's none here. The tiniest detail I never noticed until right now on this watch. If you look at Woody's right arm, you can see that it's stitched differently from the last movie. And I can't believe that detail is in here.
Yeah, and you can make an argument that last week the toys got lost in the mix of Woody's storyline. So I don't think this is much different.
Well, I think you're doing the same thing again where you're sidelining them. Now, once it's a coincidence, twice it's a pattern. But the last one, it also made sense because the second film was Woody's story. You know, if the first one was Woody and Buzz, with Buzz kind of overtaking him, it made sense to flip it. Now the ball is fully back in Woody's court.
I tell you what, Buzz is the one that gets lost here. Buzz has...
Save that, because we're getting to my issues with that. But, you know, Woody's saying, like, you know, this is well and good, but I'm leaving. And again, no one really fights him on it. Like, they're just like, oh, screw you, Woody, which, again, he was right the previous two movies, and he came back to Andy, even though he could have very easily said, I'm staying with the gang. But Woody leaves, and we get some great bits here with him, like, rolling on the toilet paper in the bathroom. He almost drops the hat in the toilet. Like, this whole, like, Mission Impossible-esque sequence, right down to a Mission Impossible reference.
Yes.
With, yeah. With the pull string.
Yeah. The fact that we did this series last year, it really brought to mind. I'm glad we did that, because it made me smile even more at this sequence.
Yeah, good action sequence.
As we'll find out, he's very protective about that hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how you have Woody going out the window on a glider and he doesn't make a reference to Falling with Style. I was waiting for the line and I can't believe they didn't do it. Buzz was right. Just something.
Yeah. Or to say like to infinity, or like he shrugs and goes to infinity beyond, I guess.
He's flying.
But he gets caught in a tree. He gets grabbed by Bonnie, who we've met earlier. I also love how the license plate is MCU.
Yeah.
Which made me laugh. But the toys think, oh my God, we're going to get played with. This is great. And you see all the toys who've been there before kind of hide.
Mm-hmm.
And then this onslaught of kids come through like a plague of zombies. And this is like anyone who's ever worked at a YMCA or a Boys and Girls Club, you have seen this on full display. And it is shockingly accurate. And I love how this is treated like a horror movie.
Yeah.
You realize, oh, that's why everyone was so like, why Lotso had to talk up such a good game.
It's a class system, and I like how it's set up that way. You know, this is completely different from all the other places that they could have gone because there's a class system associated here. You go here, you're on the low end of the totem pole, and I love how that's set up.
Can't stand this.
And I'm also
you can't stand this.
Oh, go.
Nope. This should be their dream. I understand they're toddlers. I understand everything that's going wrong, but they were with Andy since he was that same age. Andy had a sister. Andy had a dog. You are getting played with forever. I know you're getting drooled on and colored on. You are a toy. This is the dream.
Andy,
but it's not.
Andy had a way of playing with them that made them feel useful. They're not useful here. They're discarded. Yeah, they're being played with, but they're being thrown in their mouths. Like Andy never did that kind of stuff.
Yeah, which means you know who was right? Stinky Pete.
Adam's the guy who has the Thanos was right shirt.
Oh, Thanos was right.
Yeah. So my problem with this is I think this is realistic as far as, like, the kids taking this to extreme.
Oh, God, yeah.
I don't like how, like, it would have been far more interesting and complex if there was nothing wrong with the daycare center. And, like, it was an actual dilemma. But much like 2, they have to force their hand by having it not be all that it's cracked up to be. And, again, that feels like a regurgitation of what we saw in the last film, just on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
It's, again, kind of proving Prospector's point that you'll get played with, but it's kind of going to suck. And, of course, Woody gets to go with Bonnie, who treats everything with class and dignity, to the point that one of her toys acts in character all the time. And then when I realized, oh my God, that's Timothy Dalton,
loved
I
thought it.
That was genius.
Yeah, great bit of casting. Timothy Dalton's fantastic. And this whole bit of Woody with Bonnie here and all these other toys, I think Jeff Garland's here as well.
And Kristen Schaal.
Yeah, this is all fun. I love this stuff.
So, you know, we as a family had gone to Disneyland probably twice a year for a very long time. It's been a little bit since we've gone. Thanks, Josh Tomorrow. And I remember the first time we went after seeing this movie, and of course we'd come home with Toy Story toys, and we already had some, right? You know, we had the Buzz with the working light and sounds. They came home from this movie with Bonnie's toys. They came home with Trixie. They came home with the peas in a pod, and they absolutely loved Bonnie's toys. The transference from Andy to Bonnie, I think, is done pretty seamless, and it feels right the way that they do it.
Well, I also like that this is Jeff Garland. I thought that was Seth Rogen initially. Because they sound so similar.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't go like Seth Rogen.
Because I knew it was Kristen Schaal because she's got such a recognizable voice.
Oh, yeah, that's Louise through and through.
Yeah, that's Louise. But I was sitting there going, when the hedgehog started talking, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I know that voice, but I couldn't place it. And then when I read it was Timothy Dalton, I'm like, oh, that's fucking brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And the Totoro reference I loved.
Yes.
Totoro was one of her toys. God,
yeah.
And that was clearly these people love Miyazaki, not just because one of the animators was married to his niece.
Yeah.
Fun fact. And, you know, Woody's kind of getting the good life. And he's thinking, you know, maybe this is my new fresh start. And then we cut back to the toys having to literally put themselves back together. Because Rex is missing his tail. Yes. Ham's got, I don't know, what was shoved into his body. But also, like, I lose sympathy for Barbie because she just says, screw you guys, I'm going to the good place.
Yes.
Yeah, I find it weird that Andy's toys are the only ones that weren't cleaned up and put away. And I know you have to do it because it's the movie, but all the other toys are cleaned up, put away, packet, you know, put in the crates, but not Andy's toys because movie. XR is just usually smarter than that.
And they're trying to say, like, hey, Lotso, can we come with you? And he's like, hey, you guys got to be the good soldiers and kind of, like, I don't want to say earn your place, but you got to, it's like the equivalent of, like, a fraternity initiation. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you got to go through some shit. And I'm not getting too existential with some of the things I did in college, but I guess it's funny in a movie about a character going to college is kind of getting a, you're getting a preview from certain sides. And Buzz says, I'll go talk to Lotso, and he does the whole, his own navigating.
I'm in a union. This feels like going to work. Yeah.
But they also cut back to Woody, and this is where I found this odd from a writing perspective. This is the tell that Sunnyside is not all it's cracked up to be, because they go, oh my God, you escaped?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So by doing that, you kind of remove, if there was any surprise with what happens to Buzz, you remove the suspense in a way. Because Buzz, you see, I love how they're all playing cards like it's a freaking saloon from a cartoon. Yes. And they're talking about, like, who's going to break first. Uh-huh. They're taking bets. You got Whoopi Goldberg as the octopus, which was good casting. Because mm-hmm. it's clearly like, okay, now we can, now people want to come and work on these movies. Like, you know, even people like, you know, Ned Beatty, no kid knows who that is.
Yeah.
But I was half expecting a joke when they're walking back and forth during, like, the prison escape. I want someone to go, Otis, were you followed?
The days of Billy Crystal turning them down are far behind them. Like, they're having people crawling on their hands and knees trying to get in these
movies. Look at the last three villains in their Pixar movies. You had Ian Holm, Christopher Plummer, Ned Beatty.
Yeah.
No kid knows who any of those people are.
True, but they fit the characters.
You know? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's perfectly. Also a thing. Lotso's very kind of similar to the Christopher Plummer character from Up.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
And he comes in saying, like, you know, he's trying to be all grandfatherly. Things are okay. He says, hey, of course you could stay with us if you tell everyone else to leave them behind. But Buzz says no, and that's where they literally flip the switch. Yep.
Yes.
Because they have to go to the bookworm character, Richard Kind, who I love, who's also in Bug's Life. That was funny.
Oh, was he? Back.
Yeah.
He plays Kevin Spacey's brother in that.
Oh, nice.
I did. I don't know why a toy has a demo mode under the battery. But, you know, okay.
They are really conceiving crazy ways because they have run out of things to do with Buzz. It is quite obvious with this movie that they do. Now, what they do with him, I actually really laugh at what they eventually have him do. But it is obvious that they have run out of shit to do with Buzz.
Yeah, they should have got some silly putty in here because they're stretching to get where they got to go.
Yeah, it's the thing of, like, just have him leading the group. Like, why do you feel the need to, A, separate him, and B, you're having him go back to, like, Space Ranger mode. Now this one he's being manipulated and against his will, but it's clear that they had one story to tell with him in the first one and it worked great. They use him very effectively in the second one, but a large part of that is because they have another Buzz going through that same existential crisis, and you get humor out of that. And in this one they treat him like a Gestapo camp officer, but then they go too far later on with the Spanish thing, which we'll talk about. But, you know, this is where it turns into, you know, I did not expect a Toy Story movie to be The Great Escape. And as someone who loves prison break movies, like The Great Escape, Escape from Alcatraz, I like it. I also love how, if you notice, when Lotso comes in to kind of tell them what's going to be happening, there's a headlight behind him. It's shot like a gangster movie.
Oh, interesting. I
didn't realize like these that. Pixar people, you can tell they love cinema.
Yep.
With their reference.
You know, we give a lot of credit to the way that these are animated, but the way that the shots are put together and directed are really, really top notch, to your point. You could tell that these people love cinema.
And, you know, Buzz is, you know, putting them, he's saying, like, anyone who gets out of their cell is going to spend a night in the box. And it's literally, I love how it's literally a sandbox.
Yeah.
And of course, who's the one character that is the rep, is the Cool Hand Luke? It's Potato Hand. Because of course it would be Don Rickles.
Yep.
And he literally gets put in the sandbox by the baby, and he's like, there's nothing in there but sand and Lincoln Logs. I don't think those were Lincoln Logs.
Wonderful joke.
See, I think that's a little too, like, juvenile, even for Toy Story. like a resort into potty humor.
It's always walked that line, though, of good taste for kids to adult humor.
To a degree, but I think in large part these movies are very well written, that sometimes when they take the cheap way out, which doesn't happen often, which is impressive, but when it does happen, it kind of makes it stand out a little more. And I also love how we cut back to Woody, and he's having to map to get to the Sunnyside Center. But there's like a chat. She's talking to another dinosaur across the street, and they go, "Oh my God, you escaped Sunnyside!" And one of my favorite things is this fucking clown.
Yes,
with the sad face.
Yes,
I love that expression. I love the voice that comes out of it. It's Bud Lucky from Monsters Inc., and he was in Incredibles. Just that sad, grim look with the lighting. Because I'm like, all right, we're gonna get the backstory here.
The music. All of this is great.
Yeah. And you see that Lotso was, you know, this girl's favorite toy. Stop me if you've heard this before. They get lost. So it's him, Baby, and the clown. They go back. They come all this way and they realize that he was replaced, but he's the only one who saw this. And he's able to convince them that we were all thrown away. They get knocked off a Pizza Planet truck. Nice touch there.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically, you know, he's Lotso the gaslighting bear, because he... takes it over full force, and he's become a dictator. You know, like I said, it comes from a place of meaning, like it's an understandable backstory. But I just think it's, to Adam's point, too similar to kind of what they took Jesse and Prospector and merged them into one character.
I like this better than last week. I like the way Lotso is and what he has become because of it, as opposed to last week where, yeah, you had somebody who was hurt over it and you had somebody who really just accepted the fact that, yeah, I'm just going to be behind this cardboard and plastic my entire life. Here we have somebody who has lived through it and is completely damaged because of it, and I go with it because of that.
See, I don't feel like it's as nuanced. Adam, where do you stand?
I completely rebel against this. It is so similar that I can't see this as anything other than they couldn't figure out how to make it original, so we're just going to copy it. Like, I feel that this is just Grand Theft Jesse.
Grand Theft Jesse. And you know how in the previous movies we've talked about how they kind of, there's stuff that can be nightmare-inducing for children? When Woody goes back and he talks to the phone and they show the monkey on the security monitor.
Oh my God.
This is that's great nightmare fuel. And I guess someone loved Skeleton Crew.
Yeah, I was going to say, this affects a fucking adaptation that we're going to talk about here pretty soon, because it's what they do with this monkey that they had to change it in that fucking adaptation, which I'm not bitter about or anything.
Jesus.
But it's literally the one that's on the it's on the cover of the book. It's that one with the symbols.
Yep.
I love how the pupils are cameras. So someone modified that toy to put cameras in it. Like, this must have been Jordan Belfort's monkey from The Wolf of Wall Street.
They admitted as much, that they are fans of that book and that story.
And I love how they swap out Potato Head with an actual potato.
Yes.
Which, when you realize that, okay, see, now this is the smart stuff that goes over 90% of people's head. When you bought Potato Head originally, all you got was the pieces. Mm-hmm. You had to supply the potato. It was just pieces you put in a potato. So when they use other vegetables later and other materials later, it's what you would have, I mean, even before my time, because by my time you still had the plastic potato. But yeah, all you got was eyes, nose, mouth, you know, that kind of stuff. And you put it in things.
So Woody tries to take out the monkey, but he gets caught. But luckily, he's able to maneuver things around a bit. And also, we had a lot of questions in the previous two movies about the, like, how these toys operate and their sentience. So apparently, Potato Head's consciousness is in his pieces, not his core.
Okay, I had questions about this.
My brain almost exploded like scanners trying to put this together with the tortilla.
With her eye and him, I do love when he goes on the tortilla, though. But yeah, the fact that all his pieces are sentient is kind of funny to me.
Makes me laugh, especially Mrs. Potato Head with the eye.
Well, yeah, because it's still there. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like...
You can go to it any time. Like, that's really weird.
Yeah. But I love how it's literally like it's the Great Escape, where like they have toys on the playground with the spotlights. Mm-hmm. And I love they cut to Potato Head and it's the freaking bird.
Yes.
It's that moment of terror, like, oh my God, this is about to go wrong. But the plan works because they capture Buzz. And I love this detail. They put him in the box and he uses the laser and cuts a circle and tries to run through it.
Yeah.
Even little things that, like, that his glow in the dark still works. That, you know, and it happens over and over. Just smart stuff that keeps coming back.
You know, they rescue him. And meanwhile, Barbie, we have a clothing montage to La Freak, which I thought Pixar was above a clothing montage. I hate this so much.
Oh, this was fun.
Too much.
It's fun when the outfits are getting ripped, but I didn't need a whole montage. By the time we got to 2010, I was like, oh my God.
I'd almost just rather see a Barbie commercial on TV showing some of this. I don't know. I like that he's in the dream house, not her. Ken has Barbie's dream house. There's something cool about that. But the rest of this is just, this movie's not long, but this sequence feels like a 10-minute sequence.
And she uses the spaceman outfit to steal the planets for Buzz. And they try to flip him off. They don't flip him off in that sense, not just because there is the bird in this movie, but they flip the switch and now he goes into Spanish mode and he turns into freaking Antonio Banderas. I think the humor in this, I think it's too much.
I'd like that as they're doing this, you know, they can't figure it out. Oh, you know, Rex, stick your tail in their finger. So they do that. And as they're reading, it's like, you know, be careful not to hold down more than 5 seconds. And then you hear the boop, whoops. It's like, just as you read, as you learn later in life, read to the bottom of the email before responding.
But the thing is, like, they use Buzz just for, now it's just humor. He has no character function anymore. No. He's just a device that they can manipulate, yeah, whether it's for jokes or to be an authoritarian.
Yeah.
And I never saw Lightyear, so I don't know how this gets fixed. I don't remember next week's movie at all. So Buzz is a problematic character when you're trying to do the same thing with him over and over. I will admit to laughing at the Spanish, though, and the salsa dancing and all of it, and how Jessie is taken by him. All of that stuff makes me laugh.
Yeah, because she's the only female.
Yes.
That's not taken, because you got Mrs. Potato Head and Barbie. But they all get cornered by Lotso amidst the breakout. He's telling them, like, you know, you were all made to be thrown away. And we get freaking Darth Vader throwing Palpatine into the Death Star reactor when Baby throws him in the dumpster.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that was.
But I love how you think it's over and then you're like, the movie keeps going because Buzz gets smashed by a TV. I thought they killed him.
I did too. I thought for sure this killed him. But this is the one bit of lazy writing. You guys have called out a lot of lazy writing. This was the only thing that I thought was lazy. Is the fact that a TV gets thrown on him, and that's what turns him back normal.
Yeah, like, suddenly he gets factory reset completely. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's very lazy. But, you know, they're getting taken to the land. They get put in a garbage truck. The aliens run off with the claw.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure this won't pay off in a couple minutes. Yeah, they got put on a conveyor, and this is very much the airport scene from the second one, where it's the big mechanical conveyor belt. And like, I feel like I'm watching Toy Story 2 again.
A good 30-40% of this movie is what we got 10 years ago.
And it's the thing of, like, Lotso's with them, and he goes back for him, which is the biggest mistake he could have made. What I like, he stays a heel. There is no face turn.
He's consistent. He's completely consistent. He's still that damaged fucking character they met at the beginning of this. Which I like that too, Matt. I'm with you.
Yeah, I like
it. Except it's not consistent because here's the problem. The biggest continuity error, now he no longer needs the cane and can run no problem.
Jesus.
And maybe it was a swerve the whole time. Yep, damn it. Thought of that wheelchair. But also, the conveyor, as much as I'm rolling my eyes because I saw the conveyor belt last week, when it turns into the magnet and they're getting creative with how to jump up onto the magnet, that's the kind of thing where I'm like, somebody in that room decided to give a little bit more thought to just, you know, using the animatics that you already had. Mm-hmm. And I liked that.
Me too.
No, and the animation, it's quantum leaps forward with the way they're jumping and they're running in the conveyor belt with the steps.
Oh, and the difference in lighting, all of that is so well done.
The animation is great. At the same time, I don't believe in almost working your employees to the hospital just so you can get extra texture on somebody's shirt. I think there's a level. Monsters, Inc., Sully's fur.
Yeah, there has to be a balance. And, you know, he leaves them to die and they fall into a literal incinerator.
Oh my
God. And a scene that I still cannot believe that, like, they accept death. They fight it at first, and then they all hold hands.
Oh my God.
And for a split second every time I watch this movie, I think it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that is truly impressive for a movie like this, that I buy it every time. And granted, there's no way they would have done it, because it would have been the most depressing children's movie ever made. But wow, is this effective? No dialogue, which I appreciate. Nobody says a word.
No, and this movie's theme is acceptance. And they have accepted their fate here. And God, it gets me every single time, boys. Every single time I watch this movie. This fucking kills me.
They don't care.
Wow, I'm always the cold-hearted dastard. Yes! I want someone else gets to do it for a change.
Like, it's cute. I'm like, oh, nice moment. They're all holding hands.
It's cute.
But other than that, I'm more going, hey, as they're getting closer to the heat, shouldn't some of their plastic start to get affected by this?
Oh God, you're taking
Yes, I've completely taken the piss out of this scene. But no, this doesn't, emotionally, I know this is what it is for so many people, and it's why I've always been harsh on this film. This scene doesn't get me. It just doesn't. I know I'm cold-hearted. Call me Paul Abdul. I'm a cold-hearted slave, but it doesn't get me.
You are bringing logic to a movie about toys being sentient.
Hey, we just talked about the sentience of a tortilla transferring consciousness. let's not act like we are not above board with these conversations. All right, well, here's what sells it, even as someone who did not fully believe that it was going to happen. Woody is always the optimist, and he's like, yeah, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saved by the aliens with the claw.
I like the facial expression when Woody acknowledges it. There is something there that I'm like, all right. But other than, yeah. But then it's immediately bought back by the claw.
Which is a wonderful callback. A great callback. If I had seen this in theaters, my God, what a moment that was.
It's a cheer moment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's catharsis for, it's proof that religion will save us all because the hand of God saved them from the fires of hell.
Christ.
Oh my God. And
I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. I was like, oh, for fuck. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. But this is when I was sure we were going to get a spinoff of the aliens.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. But again, we talk about Toy Story 2, the resolution of Lotso. Is like, these movies just shit on the villain by sending them to like the worst situation imaginable. They fucking strap him to the front of truck.
And the bugs and everything. Oh, I fucking laugh my ass off.
Maximum Overdrive.
Yes, I thought of that too.
But I'm sitting there going, you toys can't act all high and mighty about the how being a toy is all that matters, and then you condemn one to hell, you send a child to therapy, and you strap one to the hood of a car for eternity. Like, you bunch of hypocrites. Now, I do like that the guy, he gets like hugged again. He's like, oh, he smells like strawberries, which you think that smell would wear off after a certain amount of time.
Well, yeah, stench plays a big part in this finale because all they do is go to a fucking a hose, and that's supposed to take the stink off of them, but whatever.
Well, I was also annoyed that we went from a character named Stinky Pete to one that smells like strawberries.
See, I thought that was wonderful, actually.
And the toy smelled as well. That was the amazing thing. The toy they made did have scent.
You have one, Adam? Did you get one?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, okay.
He strapped it to the front of his car.
Damn it, he beat me to it. No, I hate Lotso. Like, I can't stand this bear.
So when he comes over to play Villainous, he's not playing as Lotso.
Yeah.
No.
Although he's one of the more complicated characters to play. So. but I also love, you know, the toys magically get home just as Andy's about to leave. And this is the scene where it's the mom standing in the empty bedroom that I heard sniffles in the seat next to me. And I was like, I am not going to fucking look over because I know I'm going to lose it.
Your mom was losing it, huh?
Oh, boy. This is where this was Julia Roberts dying in Steel Magnolias for her.
I don't even have a kid in college, and I fucking lost it at this when I was watching it for this podcast.
When I originally saw this, yeah, whatever, I don't care. I'm watching it this week, and about the time that they're in the incinerator, my wife comes downstairs and sits and watches the end of this movie with me. So I have a child that's about to go to college. She's a senior, about to finish up, and we watched the last 20 minutes of this movie together.
Ooh.
Wow. Yeah, you think you're not, Matt's not looking at his mom. Laura and I aren't looking at each other.
I wish I shed the tears for this because Andy goes to Bonnie and gives all the toys away. And I feel about this scene the way Adam feels about the incinerator.
No, this is the callback. See, at the beginning of the movie, they tried rigging the phone so that Andy could play with them one last time. Guess what? This is the callback that they are getting their wish. He is playing with them one more time. They are accepting Andy leaving, and Bonnie is just as playful as Andy was. I was a mess. during this scene, guys. I was a fucking mess from the time they hit that incinerator all the way to this. I was fucking inconsolable myself. This fucking wrecked me.
All right, Adam the Grinch Bunch, I need you to back me up this one time. Because I said nothing during the incinerator. Don't tell me this scene got you.
Got me when he looked in the box, saw Woody, and then went ahead and let Woody go to Bonnie as well. And it's, look, I enjoy this, and I think it's happy. This isn't the scene that made me cry, and I'll say that there was a moment that made me cry. I like this. I think it pays off well. I think the transferring of the toys, and because we have met Bonnie now two or three times throughout the movie, we are okay with it. So I really like this donation, this moving of the toys from Andy to Bonnie. I think this is really well done. But at the end,
here comes the butt.
Holy sh! When Andy drives off, I don't know if I can get through this without crying right now. And we see it coming. But when Woody does the so long, partner, Niagara Falls, Frankie Angel. Holy shit.
I guess I'm the Grinch, because the only part in this that got me was when Andy's holding Woody. He's the last toy. And Bonnie goes to grab him. And Andy kind of pulls back. Like, almost like a primal, like, instinctual muscle memory type of reaction. Like, I don't even think he planned to do that. That's the one thing that got me. I just think this to me is like the Return of the King ending, where I'm like, just fucking end, please.
Oh, God.
Someone say cut. This scene has five false endings. And to Adam's point, though, like Andy giving them up, like this makes all the sense. Like thematically, it works. You know, it's the transition of like going into adulthood and leaving that part of yourself behind. And Andy playing with her, I'm like, oh my God, get the sugary taste out of my mouth. And just sometimes I think less is more. But the drive away and Woody saying so long, partner, I do think that's perfect. I think it's a great, if I'm looking at this as a trilogy, which for the longest of time, I thought this was going to be. Because when this movie ended, I said to my mom, as the credits were rolling and we got another shitty Randy Newman song, he belongs in the... I'm like, oh my God, this fucking hack. Like, I hate Randy Newman in the same way I hate Jeff Jarrett, apparently. But we're sitting watching the credits and you hear all the sniffling, mostly from the kids. But she looks at me and goes, there's no way you can make another one. And I looked at her and I said, I don't think you can either. And then that mouse said, oh, yeah.
Cut to nine years later.
But this, you know, got a lot of people, and the movie ends. You know, it's that transition, like I said. But, you know, you get a montage over the credits of, like, you know, the freaking Return of the Jedi ending, kind of what it is. But look, I guess you kind of earn the right to close a trilogy like this and be all grandiose. But, you know, that's a... Pardon the pun, it's a wrap on Toy Story 3. And God, I think I know where everyone's going to land, but the numbers are going to be very fascinating. Although, listen to our words, everyone, not the number, please, because I think that's what gets lost a lot when we give these scores. But Adam, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give Toy Story 3?
I have gotten, in the years that I've discussed this franchise, a lot of sandbox Tootsie Rolls for saying that this was my least favorite of the trilogy. And going back to it, after a whole lot of years, I might have been a little too harsh on this movie. I was really glad to see it with fresh eyes. You know what? Maybe when I originally saw it at the drive-in with a child that was maybe a month old, maybe I was a little too tired to appreciate what was going on. Parents can understand that. There's a lot in this movie that really works. The opening is a lot of fun. The transition and montage with Andy shows a passage of time really well. And what these toys are going to go through and their transition to a new phase of life is really smart. The ending of this movie, I think, is extremely proficient in showing a moving on to a different moment, to a different phase of life, to a different child, which would be a different adult, to a different home, whatever it may be. And then the ending moment, that so long, partner, fucking hey, y'all just heard me cry freaking a few minutes ago just trying to explain it again. So I think those parts are beautiful, but the entire middle section of this movie is problematic for me. I enjoy Sunnyside to a point, but I think it gets redundant. I think it's reused from stuff that came before, and they had all the time in the world, all the money in the world. You know, there was no quarter given to what they could have done, and I think they got lazy with reuse and with Barbie and with some of the things that I really don't think work well. I can't stand Lotso. I think everything around that bear is problematic to this film, other than just setting up the conflict. But reusing a story and just redoing something that made me cry last film with Jesse. Because of that, I turn against Lotso so much that I don't care of anything having to do with Lotso, with his gang, with his setup, because I turn against Lotso so much. And that hurts the movie as a whole. That said, the acting is as good as it's ever been from everybody, whether it's from Tom Hanks, whether it's Joan Cusack, whether it's Tim Allen, who was sidelined a lot, but who gives some really good performances. Ned Beatty, I don't like Lotso. I love Ned Beatty. I think he is just great. I think Keaton is very good. John Ratzenberger still brings that sardonic wit to Ham that I feel like I'm listening to Cliff at the end of Cheers' bar, just spouting off random factoids to be annoying. I love everybody's performance in this. The animation is as good as it's ever been. The story just lets me down a little bit. But coming back to it, I appreciated what it did so much more. And I do think, and I never said this before, and I always railed against it, I do think this is a great finale to the trilogy. I think you could have ended it here, and I think it would have been a stronger series to do so. I got a lot of problems, but it ends great. This is a very solid 7 on 10, and I'm glad I came back to see it. Very, very strong 7. It's good, and a lot of that has to do with the way that it ended.
All right, we got a 7 out of 10, so the Grinch's heart grew 3 sizes, apparently. All right, Garrett, look, you've said very openly, you kind of teased, when you walked out, you thought this was the best of the three. Is that still your thought process?
Well, let me go back to the fact that it took 11 years between this and Toy Story 2. And when I watched it originally, I thought that was the kiss of death. I thought, oh, you cannot come back to a franchise about toys 11 years later. But as it is, you cannot tell this movie without that 11 years going by, because this is about moving on from childhood to the beginning stages of adulthood and leaving those things behind. That's usually told from the human point of view. What Toy Story 3 does so brilliantly is take it from the character's point of view that we've been following for 3 straight movies and making them generally come to the realization of acceptance. I think this movie is bookended brilliantly. I think the fact that all they want is to be played by him one more time, and that's what they finally get at the end of this before being passed on, is such a wonderful device that, again, you could not have done 3, 4, 5 years after Toy Story 2. I love my best friend from here to the moon, but I completely disagree with him about Lotso. I think he is my favorite villain of this trilogy. And I think if you had wrapped this series up with this movie, it would generally be considered the best movie series of all time. As it is, I think it's the best trilogy. I do not remember next week's movie to save my life, but I do remember the emotions I felt at the very end of this movie. And I do stand by the fact that this is my favorite of the series. I do stand by the fact that I think this is the best of the series, of this trilogy. So I'm going with a solid 9 out of 10. Does it manipulate me? Abso-fucking-lutely. Did I love it? Yes. 9 out of 10 for Toy Story 3.
So it's going to be strange that my overall thoughts largely echo Adam's sentiments. But by doing so, I don't feel the furthest extreme with some of his criticisms. But ironically, I don't think the ending affected me as much as it clearly did him. But be that as it may, for a movie that I had no interest in seeing and I kind of scoffed my nose at the moment it was announced, there was a lot more soul here than I was willing to give it credit for. And once I looked past the green and the dollar signs, there is a story here about coming to terms with what you perceive to be the end and being able to literally find the next chapter in your book. The problem is, I saw that same story done at the end of Up the year before. And if it wasn't enough that Pixar kind of borrowed a lot from Toy Story 2, thematically, they even borrowed a lot from their most recent movie. And I found that very interesting that, you know, both movies are about, like I said, finding that next chapter when you think your book is completely over. That's some pretty powerful stuff. And now that I'm, you know, older in life, I'm in a different place than I was when I saw this, I kind of looked at it with a new, fresh set of eyes. And I'm going to go a little bit higher on my score than I did, Garrett, when we did this, what feels like a lifetime ago. Mm. And in some respects, it was. I'm going to give this an 8 because I do think as a trilogy, which is now what this is or was for the longest time, It is a pretty damn good wrap-up, but I don't think it's the best trilogy of all time. I think the Before trilogy, I would put higher up, and I would put The Man with No Name, if you want to count that as a trilogy. And if we want to talk about thematic trilogies, maybe I can think of some stuff. But look, for what this is, for what it started out as, to have three films of quality, and the lowest score I give on one of them is a freaking 8, that's as big of a stamp of my approval that I can give. So my only issue is that I just, much like Adam, I think there's a lot here that feels nowhere near as original as what we got in the first two films. But what can you say about, it's really hard to make a good sequel. It's really hard to make a great sequel to a great sequel. I think this one largely hits the ball on the fairway. So that's my score on Toy Story 3 is an 8 on 10. And truth be told, I thought there was no way they would make another one.
As I talked said about. Last week.
I remember that conversation with my mom, and I said, like, where can you go from here? And then when they announced Toy Story 4, if you thought I had trepidation about frickin' 3 when it was announced, I would say my feelings were even more magnified when they announced 4. Garrett, what the hell did you think when you heard that?
You and I were friends when they announced 4. We were pretty deep into our podcast over at the other place, and we were both like, what the hell? Where the hell can they take this? Honestly, I had no idea. All I remember is my lasting feelings with this movie, thinking, you know what? This is the perfect ending. And then they announced this one, and all I remember is a spork. That's literally all I remember about next week's film. And my initial thoughts when they announced it, where the hell can they take this? And will the word Andy be uttered once?
You know, Adam, we're 9 years removed. I mean, probably about 4 or 5 when they announced it. And you were pretty skeptical of 3. What did you think of hearing the dreaded words Toy Story 4?
I was actually looking forward to it. And the reason was, and I hadn't revisited 3 at the time, but I wasn't high on 3. I wanted something to finish it better for me. So I was like, okay, you know what? I bet we're going to get something to finish this off better. And then I saw all the marketing they did for it. And I saw a spork. I saw Key and Peele and went, huh, all right, maybe we won't go see, hey, Dad, we're going to go see Toy Story. All right, I guess we're going to go see Toy Story 4. Because at that point, I had 2 kids. There was no way I wasn't going to get out of seeing this in a theater at that point. So, yeah, theater watch for the family a couple months before lockdown, and we saw Toy Story in the theater.
Oh, wasn't Keanu in this one, too?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. That's yes. Right. That's the other thing I remember is Kaboom. That's the other thing.
OM Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, or well, no, Yes, I Canada.
If you thought I was cynical about 3, holy crap, what do you think about a grown man in his mid-20s by this time coming out? When I saw the trailer for this, and I saw that goddamn fork, I said, I give up. Like, that was the sign to me that they had little to no creative imagination on paper. More like on plastic, because it's a plastic fork. But even until the day it was coming out, I said, I'm going to go see it. But my question was why, that I'm flipping 96% approval rating. And I said, Are you fucking kidding me? Like, every time I think this is going to be the one, it's freaking, the critical circuit says, oh, trust me, they did it again. If lightning kept striking this tree, it would be in the equator right now. So I went to go see it.
Well, we were also reviewing it too, Matt. Yeah, don't forget that.
Because we had to. But yep. I still would have seen it. I don't know if I would have rushed out. But, you know, seeing all the kids there, and I was sitting there going, I'm amazed that it still got the impact 25 years later. But selfishly, I'm like, no, this is mine. You kids go the fuck home.
Yep.
That's my generation. But the marketing did not much for me. Although, you know, like I said, the fork, and then I saw the freaking ventriloquist dummies. I'm like, oh, good, we're traumatizing kids again. I'm back.
You sadistic bastard.
I am all for scaring kids, and Pixar has made mastery of that. But, you know, was I going to be scared going into that theater? Well, kind of was to a degree. And, you know, this one also made over $1 billion.
Jesus.
Piggy Bit Ham needs to gain a lot of weight with the amount of money that these things keep pulling in. But, you know, we had everyone back, and we didn't talk about in 3, Bo Peep, they rode out of the movie.
Yeah.
Which, we didn't mention it, but I guess they made up for it because they made her kind of the centerpiece of the next one.
Yeah.
There's one line about it in Toy Story 3, And then, you know, she's kind of pretty predominant in the marketing, and well, we'll talk about her usage in the next one. But, you know, like I said, I wasn't dying to go see it, but like when you hear these critics saying, no, it's they did it again. And this was now at a time where we had three Cars movies. We were getting more sequels. We were getting The Good Dinosaur, which, to quote Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, that is one big pile of shit. But like I said, my question was, what can you do? Like, where are they going to be? What's happening with Bonnie? Like, is she going to be a teenager now? Are they going to do another big time jump? What the hell can you possibly do? But remains to be seen. We're closing one door, and we're halfway through this retrospective. We got three more movies to go. Because we got four, we got Lightyear, and we got number five. We were three quarters of the way through, Garrett, when we first did this.
Yeah.
We were three quarters of the way through last time. Now we're only halfway. So it's like literally moving the goalposts.
Wow.
Yeah, until next week when we discuss Toy Story 4, authority should derive from the consent of the podcast, not from the threat of force. Thank you, everyone.
I'm going to have some words with this lily pad and let her know how things are run around here.
Try to stay calm, Jesse.
Buzz, you know me. I'm the definition of calm.
That's not going to work.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Good job, troops.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Let's go home.
I'm glad I got to see you again.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as Star Wars, the Pirates of the Caribbean film series, Indiana Jones, Masters of the Universe, the ongoing Marvel films, films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Beetlejuice films, the Planet of the Apes franchise, the Incredibles films, and so much more.
I don't believe that man's ever been to medical school.
I'm always listening.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Ah, that went well. It's good to see them fighting again.
It sure is.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
You have saved our lives. We are eternally grateful.
Come on, I'm not lying down on the job.
A Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, and Dave.
You would not believe what I've been through tonight.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
You got a lot to look forward to, folks.
Scheduling done by Matt.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Potato Head, Mr. and Mrs.
Here.
Trichus, check.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2026, and any and all music, movie, and sound clips are used for entertainment purposes and review only.
You still worried?
About Andy?
Nah.
It'll be fun while it lasts.
I'm proud of you, cowboy.
Besides, when it all ends, I'll have old Buzz Lightyear to keep me company. For infinity and beyond.
as I talked about last week, like I freaking adore Toy Story 2.
Well, the weird thing is, after Toy Story 2, they kind of went independent, right? They did Ratatouille and they did WALL-E,
Were both your kids born at this time, or was it just Maddie?
No, we had them both at this point. Wait, 20? No, it would have been just Madison at this point. I'm sorry doing the math because it was June. I'm like,
Carry the one. So no. Did you take her to go see this?
We did. Yeah. No, Laura would have been pregnant. Yeah, we did. And it, hang on, June 18th. Sorry. No. Okay. You know what? Nope. It's all coming together. This was a drive-in movie like 2 weeks after Alex was born.
Big difference, though. Big difference because Lotso is damaged. And the reason why, I don't even remember what the name of last week's villain already. What was
it? Prospector.
Pete, right?
Stinky Pete,
yeah. The reason why Stinky Pete...
You got Mrs. Potato Head acting like a ninja, which made me laugh.
All the monkeys. Like, that was great.
Well, I'll save that because okay. I'm getting to the stuff that really made me... I like how it's...
So, I have a child that's about to go to college. She's a senior, about to finish up. And we watched the last 20 minutes of this movie together.
Ooh.
Wow. Yeah, you think you're not... Matt's not looking at his mom. Laura and I aren't looking at each other. Because we know that there, and I have a rule that I can well up as much as possible. As long as the surface tension doesn't break, I have not cried.
Well, serious question. What was the last movie you like openly cried at? And you allowed yourself to do it?
Oh, man. Les Mis?
Oh, really?
Oh, I bought. Lord,
was it the I Have a Dream song?
I opened, like, Laura goes, you were inconsolable. Yeah. Yes, it was.
All right. Well, for the sake of opening up, can I tell you the last one that got me in a theater? Mm-hmm. Garrett, please don't laugh when I say this.
Okay.
Guardians 3.
Mm-hmm. See, I haven't seen it.
Yep. I can, yeah.
Shoot, and the reason what? I'll say,
I might,
I'm not going to spoil the movie, but I'm gonna say, Adam's going to know what I'm talking about. My grandfather died 2 weeks before that movie came out.
Oh.
And there's a scene in that movie that destroyed, like, it wasn't, It was largely because of the movie and what it pays off, but it was that context.
Yep.
That, like, I was crying so hard, someone asked me if I was okay, like, as we were walking out.
I get that. Oof.
But I wish I shed tears. I wish I shed the tears for this, because Andy goes to... And God, I think I know where everyone's going to land, but the numbers are going to be very fascinating, although... Listen to our words, everyone, not the number, please, because I think that's what gets lost a lot when we give these scores. But who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Go ahead. All right, Adam. All right, let me edit this then. Adam, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give Toy Story 3?
Hi, toys.